So, good evening, everyone. It does sound a little bit soft for me. Is it loud enough for everyone? Okay, and we can turn up the volume at some point, any of us. And there's also the hearing system devices outside, just outside the door there, if you need them. So I'm going to say a little bit more about logistics and some of the points here. And then we'll do the formal beginning where I'll formally kind of welcome you here to the retreat. And then Devin will introduce the theme for the retreat. It's the custom here at IRC to have a theme that ties the different talks together and kind of a theme for the retreat. And then technically, the formal beginning of the retreat is when we recite together the refuges and precepts. With Nolita, we'll talk about first and then offer the precepts. And all aim to be finished at 8:30. And the reason for the 8:30 ending is so that you can go to bed early, which we recommend. Many people have traveled a lot or worked hard to get here, and it's just nice to kind of try to get a full night's sleep the first night. And so one of the things that I didn't say about the COVID protocol is that the teachers, when we're teaching, will take our masks off so that we can all kind of be a little bit more reassured around that. We'll be testing ourselves every morning with the theory. I think it has some support, but I don't know how much. The theory is that once you've been tested, your chances of being contagious with COVID are very poor for the next 12 hours. So we have about a 12-hour window. So we'll test ourselves in the morning, and then and the teacher who's doing the talking, like I am now, Devin will be in a few minutes, can take off the mask. And so just so you know, that's coming and how we're thinking about it. And we want you to be comfortable if you're sitting in chairs. And any chair that's publicly available here at IRC, you can bring into the meditation hall. Some people prefer to sit in those wonderful turquoise chairs that are downstairs on rollers because of the color or something. And you're very welcome to bring it up here. Some people like to sit in the black mesh chairs, and we have more of them in the what's called the fire closet, just past the water fountain there. And you can bring those in and put them in here if you'd like. We would like to ask you that it seems very nice right now, the number of empty chairs and the number of empty zabutons. So what that means is if you can only reserve one or the other for yourself, then chances are whenever you come, if you want to sit in the alternative way, you'll find another one available. So just so that's more fluid, because over time it's nice to kind of vary how you sit. And then tomorrow morning we'll start giving some of the instructions. We'll give sitting instructions and walking instructions at 8:30 sitting, and then at 11 o'clock we'll offer posture instructions. And so things will just roll along. And what you need to do is show up. That's one of the secrets of this practice, is showing up. And it'll all unfold. So the beginning of practice events in our Buddhist tradition, like retreats, longer retreats, is to somehow evoke the unseen forces that are at play here. In the traditional language, you would offer your kindness and your gratitude, appreciation to the devas of the place. And for people who don't quite understand what a deva is, kind of a god or a spirit, there's a lot of unseen forces at play here in this place that we're sitting in, and some of them are historical. The people who were here before us. Some of it has to do with the backgrounds that we come from. We come from so many different backgrounds. And those are invisible forces that are at play here. So maybe not visible to you, but they're kind of here, in ways that are not actually tangible. And there's the nature of this place and these mountains and the ocean that's nearby and the skies. And there's a lot that comes to is coming together here. And it's kind of a little bit of a concentrated force of a lot of goodness, a fair amount of suffering in the background that is in the field we're sitting in. And so to evoke our generosity, our kindness, our care, our respect, our reverence for this larger unseen world, and to ask for its support for us, that we're here. I was recently in February in New Zealand, and I'd never been to New Zealand before. And what the biggest impact being in New Zealand had for me was to see the relationship between the native Maoris, the Maori people, and the Kiwis. The Kiwis are the European people who settled there, colonized there. And the Maoris were there about 400 years in New Zealand before the Europeans came. And, you know, as colonizing people did, they squashed the Maoris pretty badly and took their lands and treated them terribly. But about 30 years ago, there was a civil rights march through New Zealand by the Maori. And that was a catalyst to change the relationship between the Europeans and the Maoris. And the Maori people and the Maori culture and the Maori language was steadily, over 30 years, brought into the Kiwi culture and integrated in. So much so that the people, you go past people in the streets or different places, they would say hello in Maori to you. First I thought, what are the people mumbling? But they would say, ki a ora, hello. And people in their 20s and knew Maori. They had learned it in school growing up. And it seemed like all the people, all the Kiwis, all the European-based people living there, had all learned Maori songs in Maori. And so when we opened the retreat I taught, everybody stood up and with great gusto chanted these beautiful Maori songs that were all about peace and love. I saw the translations. And when the retreat ended, they all sang in Maori. And I looked at that and I said, wow. And they're talking, they're still, it's a bit of a struggle, but the Kiwis are kind of proud at what they're doing there. And I said, wow, we're like light years behind here in this country. The idea of bringing in and including and belonging all these different cultures. And then when I read that the Maoris were only in New Zealand 400 years before the Kiwis came, I said, Gil, you're an immigrant to the United States. There were people here thousands of years before you. Spanish-speaking people were here 500 years before you. Blacks were here 400 years before you. Chinese were 200 years before you or so, 150. Japanese were maybe 125 or something. And just goes to all these people who came before me. They also belong, everyone belongs here now, from in my eyes, coming here as a latecomer to this northern American continent. And what have we done to include and to come together and all of us belong and share? So I did a little bit of research. And I think I discovered how to say, you are welcome here in the language of the Native Americans of this region, the Mutsun. It was a language that people stopped speaking maybe in the 1930s or 1960s, somewhere in there. But that there was a tremendous amount of study of that language in the 1920s. So the Smithsonian is full of phonographs and studies and interviews. And that language is now being relearned by the Native Americans, descendants of the Mutsun tribe. So it's the language is Mutsun. And I met some of their teenagers in that tribe, and I kind of was heartbroken. It's like, oh, may these teenagers grow up without the struggles that their parents and grandparents had living here. And they're part of the invisible force here. So I thought if it would be, I have my friend who's a Mutsun, I haven't asked him yet if it's okay to use his language, but I'm going to. But in that language that hasn't been spoken for a long time, as far as I could reconstruct from a dictionary, you would say, you are welcome here by saying, men uche ni. Men uche ni. That's a Norwegian-American accent. I don't know the accent way, but so that's what I'd like to offer all of you. You are welcomed here. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whatever your background, whatever your race, whatever your economics and class and gender and sexual orientation and politics and We all belong here. We're all welcomed here. And may we remember the unseen that has so often not felt welcomed. And may we learn to be together here as a community, to learn how to be welcoming to each other here, so that it spreads and we can grow and develop as a welcoming community. Welcome. And let's find this way together. Thank you.
Good evening. How's the sound? Did it go up a little bit? Yeah. Okay. Oh, testing, testing, testing. How's that now? Is that a little better? Yeah, great. Okay. Just sitting in silence together, I was feeling into the goodness that's here in the room. The sincerity, the bravery. Some of you are here for the very first time. So really honoring the efforts that it took to get here and the community that we're building, the Sangha. I want to begin with a poem. And this is from the book, The First Free Women, which was written by Maddie Weingast and Aya Anandabodhi, inspired by the poetry of the first Buddhist nuns, the first awakened women in this tradition. And so each poem has the name of one of the bhikkhunis, the nuns, and this one is called Dira, which means self-reliant. Look closely, my heart. See how all things arise and pass away. Even that which is turning the shapes on this page into the sounds and thoughts you are right now silently speaking to yourself. When you no longer need to read the signs to find your way, you'll know for yourself that books and maps can only get you so far. There is a direct path. Look closely, my heart. See how all things arise and pass away. There is a direct path. So a story from the suttas that I learned from Gil. Once upon a time, there was a woods person, a person who would go out into the woods and steward the land, take care of the forests, cut the wood, and spend their time wandering through the forest. And so one day, this person happened upon an ancient path. It's all grown over and mossy and lots of underbrush. And so this woods person started cutting away and cutting away and cutting away and clearing the path, this ancient path through the woods. And after a lot of cutting and a lot of effort, finally this person happened upon the ruins of an ancient city. This big, amazing, beautiful ancient city that had long been forgotten. And so this woods person runs back down to the village. And these villagers and all of the people in that town, they didn't even know they were living in a kind of rundown town. And he went back and he said, "Look, there's this whole ancient city that's just waiting for us to go and discover it." And he led all of the townspeople back to the ancient ruins, and they were able to inhabit this big, beautiful city once again. And this story, do you know who the woods person is? The woods person is the Buddha. He discovered this ancient path that had already been existing there. The city is enlightenment, and he's leading us all. We are the townspeople that he's leading along this path to discover where we can live safely and happily together. There is a direct path. This possibility of awakening and the way that is shown to us. And so the theme that we've chosen for this week is this deep wisdom insight that leads us on the path. Often it's a gateway to awakening, and that is the insight into impermanence. Anicca. We find this all throughout the suttas, the Buddha pointing again and again to the power and the truth and the beauty in impermanence. We see it in the Satipatthana Sutta, the foundations, the four foundations or establishments of mindfulness, of body and feeling tone, of mind and phenomena. The Buddha says, see all of these arising and passing away. See their impermanent nature. Many of you know that the Buddha ordained his son when he was 7 years old. And so he taught his son how to practice and how to find his way to freedom also. Son was Rahula. And so in a sutta, the Buddha leads his son Rahula to liberation through a guided reflection on impermanence. He says, see all the sense spheres, the hearing and seeing and tasting and smelling and touching. Notice how they're arising and passing away. It breaks through all your views about things. And elsewhere we see this teaching on impermanence applied to so many lists of mental states and factors of experience. So we see it in the senses, the arising and passing away. We also see it in the five spiritual faculties. We can see the impermanence in faith, energy, mindfulness, samadhi, or concentration, and wisdom. And so this week we've chosen to use this list of the five spiritual faculties day by day. We'll be talking about them one by one and how we can use them to discover this truth of impermanence. We walk this path through the woods with the Buddha showing us the way. The Buddha calls this a miracle, the miracle of knowing feelings, perceptions, and thoughts as they arise, persist, and disappear. Can we feel that as the miracle of things? This poem by Li Yang Li called One Heart. Look at the birds. Even flying is born out of nothing. The first sky is inside you. Open at either end of day. The work of wings was always freedom, fastening one heart to every falling thing. Can we fasten our mindfulness to every falling thing, moment by moment by moment, seeing change? In one of the most famous suttas, the Turning of the Wheel of Dhamma Sutta, there's this beloved character named Kondanya. And he was one of the Buddha's friends who practiced before, they all practiced together before the Buddha attained his enlightenment. And then the Buddha did have this great discovery about how all things arise and pass away. Light bulb went off. And then he went back to teach his friends what he had discovered. And he gave this teaching, perhaps on the arising and passing away of things. And as he gave that teaching, the sutta says, Kondanya understands. He saw that all things arise and pass away. And the language is like, wow. The beauty, the exclamation of that realization. Wow. Core liberating insight is about impermanence. That's what leads to his freedom. John O'Donohue says, I would love to live as the river flows, carried by the surprise of its own unfolding. I think that's what impermanence leads us into. And this week, can we be carried by the surprise of reality unfolding? Not our reality, not somebody else's, just reality. Causes and conditions coming together and falling apart again and again and again. The surprise of its own unfolding. And so this is one of the most important meditation instructions. Just see how things arise and pass away. Very simple. Don't have to think too much about it. It can be very deeply experiential. And this pointing again and again to our meditation practice, this is the path. That's what we're doing here. We're walking it together. And we can do it. We can have that. Wow. Everything is changing. Sharon Salzberg says this. She says, it's a great turning point in our spiritual lives when we go from intellectual appreciation of a path to the heartfelt confidence that says, yes, it is possible to awaken. I can too. A tremendous joy accompanies this confidence. When we place our hearts upon the practice, the teachings come alive. That turning point, which transforms an abstract concept of a spiritual path, our own personal path, is faith. That turning point, which transforms an abstract concept of a spiritual path, to our own personal path is faith. And Nolita will be talking about faith very soon. And then this pointing to this experience, Sayadaw Utejaniya, this wonderful Burmese monk who says, when insight arises, it is a moment of liberation, not separate from reality, but reality itself. So can we trust that in those moments of seeing impermanence in all of its forms? And lastly, just to close this little introduction with one more poem. It's kind of a nice bedtime poem. This is called Blessing the Boats by Lucille Clifton. Could be a blessing for this retreat. You could think about it that way. May the tide that is entering even now the lip of our understanding carry you out beyond the face of fear. May you kiss the wind, then turn from it, certain that it will love your back. May you open your eyes to water, water waving forever. And may you, in your innocence, sail through this to that. And may you, in your innocence, sail through this to that. So in a moment, we'll be chanting the refuges and precepts together. I always think of that as pushing the boat off from the dock, setting sail out into the ocean. And so I feel deeply honored to be on the boat with you, here together, all of us with our oars paddling away, walking down this ancient path. So, thank you so much for your practice, yeah.
So, as we start this journey, this period of extended practice, it's important to consider all that can support us, that can inspire us. So that when there are moments of difficulty, we have something to draw from. The story that Gil shares about his experience in Maui, starting opening a retreat, reminds me of a story told by one of the first teachers in Southern Africa, Rob Nan, in the Tibet tradition. He has invited a Lama to come teach in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe shares a border with South Africa. And he says, this Lama at the end of the retreat, having observed the culture of Zimbabweans, says to Robert Nan, if next time I come here and we do not start the retreat with dance and song. I'm not coming back here. I'm not going to ask you to dance and sing. In this Buddhist tradition, an important practice at the beginning of a retreat, it's the ceremony. You could even call it a prayer of taking refuge. What is it to take refuge? If we consider the word refuge, a refuge is a place where we go for support, for safety. So taking refuge in Buddhism is actually about that. So in Buddhism, we take refuge in the triple jewel, the jewel of Buddha, the jewel of Dhamma, the jewel of Sangha. Why jewel? The three are jewels because of the immeasurable value that they offer to you and me in support of us for the spiritual quest endeavor for freedom. Buddha, what does that mean? There's an immeasurable value as a jewel. It means awake, aware of reality, seeing things as they are. So there's the historical Buddha who got enlightened as a human being like you and me. So when we take refuge in the Buddha, it's also about the potential within us for awakening. The second jewel is the jewel of the teachings themselves, the Dhamma. These are teaching practices, methods that are a doorway to freedom. We also take refuge in the Sangha, the community of practitioners. The importance of Sangha is that when we're social beings, we influence each other. When we notice somebody putting their best effort, we're inspired by that. We're energized by that. So as this community that is at its early stage, it's going to be important to strengthen the sense of belonging, being a part of, being supported, by being mindful in relation to how we show up. Knowing that how we show up, we can be a source of inspiration to each other. So part of the ceremony of taking refuge, we also undertake the training in precepts. It's training in virtue, it's training in ethics. I've always appreciated this positioning of this important foundational teaching and practice in Buddhism, that it's positioned as training. So it means we're not perfect, we're not here already perfect in it. You and I are going to fail from time to time to observe precepts. The good news is that you acknowledge that and start again. What underpins training in precepts, it's this important principle of non-harm. Buddha called training in precepts a form of generosity. We gift each other by refraining from acting on impulses and urges of harm that can lead to abuse, harm. So there are five precepts that we will commit to as we begin this retreat. The first precept is we train to refrain from killing. In that commitment, we are acknowledging that all of us and every creature wants to live, wants protection. So it's an act of respect, reverence to all forms of life when we commit to train in not causing harm through killing. And the second precept, we're committing to refrain from taking that which is not freely given. Not stealing. We're committing there to protect each other's belongings, assets. The third precept. We commit to refrain from sexual misconduct. What that means is that we will not engage in any form of sexual activity during this retreat. This also includes what earlier on Gil spoke to, that we will not express any form of romantic ideas to each other whilst we're in this retreat, whilst we're here in IRC. The fourth precept has to do with how we use speech. Fortunately, we are in noble silence in this retreat. There isn't much risk about this. We refrain from using harmful speech, divisive speech, false speech. The fifth precept is that we will refrain from taking any substances that will lead to heedfulness, to dullness of the mind, like drugs, intoxicants. What can come through our devices? We will protect our minds from that which leads to harm. So what we're going to do now is a formal exercise in actually taking refuge. I'm going to distribute copies of the... Oh, you're going to help me? Okay. Thank you again. So we'll do call and response. So I will recite a line and we'll use Pali, and then together we will then repeat that line. Okay. So going to the three refuges, Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Sangam Saranam Gacchami. Tudiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tudiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tudiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Tadiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tadiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tadiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Taking the five precepts, we'll do the English version. I undertake the training to refrain from killing living beings. I undertake the training to refrain from taking what is not given. I undertake the training to refrain from intentional sexual activity.
I undertake the training to refrain from intentional sexual activity.
I undertake the training to refrain from false speech.
I undertake the training to refrain from false speech.
I undertake the training to refrain from taking intoxicants, which could cloud the mind and cause heedlessness.
I undertake the training to refrain from taking intoxicants, which cloud the mind and cause heedlessness.
May this virtue of mine help bring about knowledge of the path and its fruit. May as we give ourselves to cultivation of compassion and wisdom for this period of practice together, may we draw from these teachings, may we draw from this prayer. We are officially in noble silence from now on. Thank you for being here. This is a fortunate circumstance to have this opportunity with all the conditions that we have to practice. Practicing for freedom. Thank you.
So with that, thank you. We can celebrate the beginning of this retreat. If we were able to stay up later, we would do the dancing and singing. But I think we should go to bed. But someday, maybe. So a couple of things, maybe it was told to you all clearly enough, those of you who are practice leaders, but if you're going to be ringing the bell, ending the meditation periods, you can either sit here where Devin is sitting or in the chair that I'm sitting in, and the bell is right here, and there's clocks. And forgive me if I'm repeating what you were told, and that is that if this bell is much more sensitive than most people realize. So if you, for the first time, hit it what you think is a light touch, it'll probably be a big clang, and that can never be undone. But if you start off super low, like, could you hear that? That can be redone. And you could also come here during a break, during the meals, like at the beginning of a meal, no one's in here, and you can practice a little bit and hit it a few times, because you don't want to do that, so people end up jumping off their seats. These chant sheets, if you want to keep these by your seat as a reference, that it might be nice to have, you can keep it. Otherwise, you can put it on that folding table that's just outside that door there, and they stack there. So please sleep well. And we'll see you in the morning. And whoever is going to ring the bell for the practice, who's the first sitting? You're doing it? The manager's doing it? ring the bell two or 3 minutes early, just the first morning for the cleaning period we have, people are just kind of finding their way. They need a little bit more time to find their way. And then if you don't know what your tool or your tools are or something, the managers are going to circulate around. We're walking around the building, so they'll come close to you at some point. You can say, where's the brush or where's the broom or whatever you need? And then when you hear the bell to end that cleaning period, this is really the difficult part for some of us. When you hear the bell, put everything away, stop. Even though there's more to be done. Unless it's ridiculously, you have to do more. But generally, you can just put it away and continue it tomorrow, the next day. So thank you.